My name is Sarah Metcalf, one of the medical editors of Australian Family Physician, and in this issue for August Growing Epidemics, we have an article on the metabolic syndrome, and I'm joined by the author of that article, Professor Mark Harris, who's the Director for the Centre of Primary Health Care and Equity at the University of New South Wales and the Centre for Research Excellence in Obesity Management and Prevention in Primary Health Care. Thanks for joining me, Professor Harris.
Good morning, Sarah.
So you've written about the metabolic syndrome in this issue for us. It's an entity that sometimes I think under-recognised in general practice, often gets a bit lost amongst all the other measures of risk that we have for diabetes and cardiovascular disease. Can we perhaps start by just clearly defining the metabolic syndrome and a bit of a discussion about why it's important to make that diagnosis for our patients?
Sure. One of the reasons that people are often a little bit confused about it is that the definitions have varied quite a bit up until recently. And then fortunately, in 2009, there's been a joint statement which has kind of clarified it. So we've now got a single definition, and one of the good things about that definition is that it doesn't require you to measure insulin resistance. Some of the previous definitions actually required that to be measured, which is obviously much more difficult to do.
Certainly.
So the criteria really are you really need to have a number of the risk factors. And the key one really is elevated waist circumference.
Yes.
Elevated triglyceride levels, reduced high-density lipoprotein cholesterol, elevated blood pressure, and elevated fasting glucose. So you really need three of those five risk factors to say that someone's got metabolic syndrome. And all of those are things which are readily accessible in general practice and don't require special testing. And I think it's important really because it does provide that additional emphasis, particularly on waist circumference and insulin resistance.
So why do you think it's not commonly a diagnosis that we make in general practice? I mean, we touched on some confusion about the criteria.
Yeah, part of it's awareness and as I said, the fact that there's been some confusion up until, you know, the last few years about what it was and what you needed to make the diagnosis. And there have been some criticisms about it, saying that, you know, really what does it add? In addition to the risk factors. But I think the other, there's a very practical reason is that we really don't assess people's waist circumference very frequently in general practice. Some of our data suggests that it's in people who are at risk, we're assessing it at less than one in five patients. There's a tendency to think that you can, that the body mass index gives you the same information.
Yes.
Body mass index is very important, but it doesn't. It's not just about weight and height. It's about abdominal obesity, and particularly in men, it's important because men often will have elevated waist circumference, and whereas their overall BMI might be not too bad, they might be in perhaps the overweight range, but they're not obese, but they've got this large abdominal waist circumference. And so doing assessing someone for metabolic syndrome really just adds an extra impetus to saying, well, this is something we need to do something about.
Yes, and in you know, some groups that might sort of push them from a moderate risk category to a higher risk category if we did recognise that.
Especially the people on the borderline. Mm. So you might do a cardiovascular risk assessment and someone might be, you know, 10% or 12% or something, but they've got, they satisfy all the criteria for metabolic syndrome. So they're people that you're going to be concerned about, not just because of their global cardiovascular risk, but because of their risk of diabetes, etc.
And it's a simple procedure, so it's very interesting that it's just not something we do commonly.
Well, it is now. As I said, some of the previous criteria required, people to have a glucose tolerance test, or even more complicated to do insulin levels and insulin resistance, and that's something which is a bit more complicated to calculate from glucose levels. For many GPs, it was something that was sort of in the fine print. In terms of making a diagnosis of metabolic syndrome, it's quite a simple procedure. If you're going to try and assess the degree to which someone has the metabolic syndrome, it gets a bit more complicated. But certainly saying, and particularly as an educational tool, which is probably one of its major values, in trying to improve adherence to management of risk factors, it's pretty simple.
Yeah, so we really just need to get the tape measure out a bit more often, don't we?
Yeah, okay.
So, and can the syndrome be prevented? Can we get in early?
Yeah, well, I think it certainly can be prevented, and there's pretty good evidence that diet and physical activity and weight control are all important. The risk of metabolic syndrome is reduced by increased physical activity, especially the higher intensity activities like fast walking or jogging.
Right.
And there's increasing evidence that that's important for cardiovascular risk and clearly for diabetes risk, and avoiding sedentary behaviour. And that includes not only watching television, but sitting at a desk all day in front of a computer as well. So, and interventions in adolescence particularly are important in terms of increasing people's physical activity. Diabetes prevention is important in people with metabolic syndrome, and there's obviously a lot of overlap between preventing metabolic syndrome and preventing diabetes, so that if we can, the same sort of approach that we take to preventing diabetes is similar to the approach to prevent metabolic syndrome, and that's not surprising given the relationship between them.
Yes, that's right. So, similarly, if we do diagnose the metabolic syndrome in our patients, obviously the first line management focuses on these lifestyle risk factors, so trying to get some weight off and focusing on the physical activity.
Yeah, I think that's critically important, and what we do with someone who had impaired glucose tolerance, we're aiming for at least a 5% and preferably up to around a 10% reduction in weight, and that will very significantly reduce the risk of metabolic syndrome.
Yeah.
And so we need to, that certainly should be our goal in terms of weight loss. But of course, people don't have to go back to having a perfect ideal weight. I mean, ideally they might need to lose 20% of their body weight, but if we can, in someone with metabolic syndrome, if you can get them to lose between 5% and 10% of their weight, that'll have a major metabolic benefit.
Yes, and the new obesity management guidelines have been out for some months from the NHMRC, and so they've got some specifics about how to go about that, another of our articles this month is on obesity management in general practice, readers can have a look in a bit more detail there as well.
And the key to weight reduction is particularly avoiding, obviously, high-energy foods, but today, for most people, it's about reducing portion size. And so you can really get a energy deficit in the diet.
Yes, yes. Okay, and when we're looking at sort of our patient's risk of metabolic syndrome, there are certain medications and also other health conditions that can increase the risk of metabolic syndrome. So what are those ones that we should be aware of?
Yes, well, I think that this is a really key role for general practice because, you know, obviously one of the things we want to be doing is not making things worse and trying to either avoid or manage the risk of medications. And there are a number of medications which put people at risk of central obesity and insulin resistance and weight gain, really, and then central obesity and insulin resistance. And the ones that we're probably pretty familiar with are the psychotropic medications, things like the newer antipsychotic agents, like olanzapine, for example. It also can occur with antidepressants. The SSRIs are also associated with weight gain in not everyone, but in some people, and with an increased risk of metabolic syndrome. And you know, there's other drugs. A number of the anticonvulsants and beta blockers increase appetite and are associated with weight gain. So we really need to be making sure that, as I said, either we avoid the medications. It's not always possible to avoid the medications. For example, in someone, you know, we can't avoid the antipsychotic agents in someone who needs to be treated with them for a psychosis.
No, there aren't a lot of options in that field, really, are there, unfortunately?
That's right. Yeah, but we need to be really thinking about this as a potential side effect and monitoring carefully and so that, you know, if people do start to gain weight, we get in there and really try and do something about it early rather than waiting till someone's put on, you know, 20% of their extra body weight, and then it's obviously much more difficult.
Yes.
The other things to consider, as you mentioned, that there are some conditions like particularly polycystic ovary disease, which would be, again, something that would be known to most GPs.
Certainly.
But also things like sleep apnea, which can predispose to metabolic syndrome. And so we need to be thoughtful about metabolic syndrome and particularly abdominal obesity in those conditions, but also trying to actively manage those conditions so that people don't develop metabolic syndrome, or if they do, that it's well controlled.
Yes.
The problem, of course, is that in terms of the management of metabolic syndrome itself, there's no specific drug that we can say, yes, this is going to be the way you treat it. There are drugs which reduce particularly glucose levels and triglyceride levels, and particularly some of the diabetic drugs, the oral hypoglycemic agents, metformin, and the thiazolidates.
Yes, you'd logically think they might be helpful. Yeah.
But they're not licensed for use. Well, the evidence about their value in people who have metabolic syndrome and not diabetes is still controversial, and they're not licensed for that use in Australia. The other thing is that we shouldn't think about those drugs as being, in the case of metabolic syndrome, being a replacement for the lifestyle interventions. For example, in diabetes prevention trials, it's very clear that metformin, for example, was inferior to lifestyle interventions on their own in preventing diabetes. So
really does reinforce that even in diabetic patients, you can't forget about those lifestyle changes regardless of what treatment they end up on.
Yeah, so the focus with people with metabolic syndrome is to really manage the individual risk factors, which kind of brings us back to where we began. and we don't have a kind of magic bullet for metabolic syndrome itself.
No.
And, you know, something that corrects particularly the insulin resistance and the centripetal obesity. There's not a drug that seems to just do that. But obviously, if people do have diabetes, then it's another reason to try to use a drug like metformin, because it can limit weight gain.
Yeah.
The other thing to consider, in particularly in people who are morbidly obese, so who've got a BMI of 40 or who've got a BMI of 35 with another problem, and metabolic syndrome itself probably constitutes another problem, then they're worth considering bariatric surgery, again, assuming that that's available and affordable.
Yes, that's one of the big problems, isn't it?
Which is one of the big problems with gastric surgery.
Yeah, and I understand some of the techniques for the bariatric surgery, there's a suggestion that perhaps there are metabolic benefits as well as the weight loss with those.
Yeah, particularly the bypass procedures and possibly the sleeve procedures, there does seem to be some additional metabolic benefits over, for example, the traditional banding procedure. Obviously, the big benefit is from weight loss and the fact that you're able to achieve, you know, very significant weight loss with bariatric surgery, which is very, you know, in someone, particularly in someone who's got a BMI of 40 or more, it's very difficult to achieve more than about 10% with normal lifestyle measures and non-surgical measures.
Yes. Okay. So, I guess just to sum up, Professor Harris, what do you think are the key points for GPs to remember when they're thinking about assessing their patients for the metabolic syndrome?
Yeah. Well, I think the first thing is to think about it as really an adjunct. It's another tool that it's based on meeting three of the five criteria: central adiposity, elevated triglyceride, HDL lipoprotein, hypertension, or elevated glucose.
And I can refer people to there's a lovely table in the article that sets out those criteria and their thresholds, and that's page 525 if people want to have a closer look at that.
And the one I'd really stress is waist circumference. The only caveat with that is that we need to remember that some of the thresholds are different for different ethnic groups. And there's a table, I think, in the article that summarises that. That it does increase the risk of both diabetes and cardiovascular disease and overall mortality, that prevention and treatment should first and foremost focus on increasing physical activity and reducing weight, and that we need to be thinking about not only other conditions like polycystic ovary disease and sleep apnea, but potentially medications that we may have prescribed for patients which may be associated with weight gain and particularly abdominal weight gain, and trying where possible to treat it early or prevent it is one of the keys. And that for the specific pharmacotherapy, there isn't a specific pharmacotherapy for metabolic syndrome, it really focuses on managing the individual risk factors such as blood pressure and lipids and glycemia.
Yes, fantastic. So, you know, really it's just putting this up there when we're thinking about risk to remember that this adds another dimension to things and it's important to think about.
Yes, indeed. It's as I mentioned, it's still a bit... there's still some people who say, well, what does it add? But I think it does, particularly in its focus on abdominal obesity and the importance of waist circumference and on the underlying insulin resistance, which drives a number of these problems.
Fantastic. Well, thanks very much for your time, Professor Harris.
Okay.